From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After canceling his much-anticipated Singapore meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, President Donald Trump went ahead with the meeting on early Tuesday morning. The highly photographed handshake between the two leaders was historic. But what else was actually achieved beyond the made-for-TV moment? Ahead of their discussion, Trump optimistically claimed they were, quote, going to have a great discussion, and I think tremendous success. It will be tremendously successful. He added, quote, we have a terrific relationship, I have no doubt. It was highly unusual for the two heads of state to meet at the beginning of negotiations rather than near the end of two-party talks between representatives. If the goal of the U.S. government is to denuclearize North Korea as a step toward normalized relations, it remains to be seen whether the two leaders agree on the framework and the outcomes of that goal. We'll turn now to Kevin Martin, president of Peace Action and convener of the Korea Peace Network. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Glad to be with you.
So before we get into what could be achieved, were you surprised that the summit finally went through? We had done a lot of coverage on our show in the lead up to it and then covered the cancellation. And it was almost, you know, touch and go whether it was actually going to end up happening. And it did.
Yeah, they ruined an op-ed that I wrote. I wrote an op-ed. I dashed it off the day that they canceled it and I was on TV. And then the next day, oh, it might be on again. But that's okay. No, I guess I'm not surprised because I think we're seeing something pretty rare. And I think in this era where peace is thought to be weak or not to be valued in terms of national and international security, we're seeing something that most people just don't recognize, which is that peace has its own momentum. Now, Trump could screw it up. There's no question about that. But Koreans are sick of this division and of this tension of having military threats and nuclear weapons over their head. Koreans want peace. And I think Trump is smart enough not to stand in the way. And the person who really deserves the most credit for this is South Korean President Moon Jae-in, and especially the people of South Korea, the candlelight revolution that helped put him in power. So I think there's a lot of details. There could be forks in the road, but we're on the right path now. Just last fall, I was really afraid there could be a nuclear war. Trump was talking about fire and fury and destroying all of North Korea. And thankfully, we're a long way from that. And we seem to be at least on the first steps on the path to peace.
So rather than looking at this as Trump bringing the two Koreas together, we really should be looking at it as the Koreas bringing themselves together and Trump agreeing not to stand in their way. And really South Korea bringing the U.S. and North Korea together.
Exactly. Another way to put it is that President Moon opened the door and there was Kim as well, and Trump was smart enough to walk through it. We can get into some of the details. There was at least one surprising detail that Trump threw out yesterday. But I think in general, you have to look at this as very positive. And it's interesting, the partisan politics here in Washington, a lot of Democrats don't like this. And I hate to say this, but it seems like they hate Trump more than they want peace or they want to respect the wishes of the Koreans. I'm no fan of Trump at all, but if he is party to making this peace agreement happen, you know, more power to him.
Well, let's get to what the Democrats fear. But first, what surprised you about what Trump said during the summit?
Well, I read the statement, and they don't even call it an agreement, certainly not a treaty, it's long from that, but the statement. And in the statement, it did talk about denuclearization by North Korea, but it did not talk about something that we've had on again and off again since the beginning of the year, a freeze or a halt to the massive U.S.-South Korea war drills. These are the largest war drills carried out anywhere in the globe. And they did postpone them until after the Olympics earlier this year, which was great. It's not in the agreement, but Trump announced in his press conference, and he calls them the war games, that he does want to halt the war games and that would save a lot of money, which it would. And he talked about wanting to bring U.S. soldiers home from South Korea. There's 32,000 soldiers still there. And it's possible that he did not consult with President Moon about that. There seems to be some speculation. I haven't seen anything from the South Korean government. So we don't know. But that could be an interesting negotiation between the two. If South Korea wasn't consulted and maybe doesn't agree yet, to halt the war games. Now, then that could be the subject of future negotiations, if that's the case.
I want to play for you and our audience a video of an excerpt of President Trump speaking at the summit in Singapore early Tuesday morning.
Nearly 70 years ago, think of that, 70 years ago, an extremely bloody conflict ravaged the Korean Peninsula. Countless people died in the conflict, including tens of thousands of brave Americans. Yet while the armistice was agreed to, the war never ended, to this day, never ended. But now we can all have hope that it will soon end, and it will soon end. The past does not have to define the future. Yesterday's conflict does not have to be tomorrow's war. And as history has proven over and over again, adversaries can indeed become friends. We can honor the sacrifice of our forefathers by replacing the horrors of battle with the blessings of peace. And that's what we're doing, and that's what we have done. There is no limit to what North Korea can achieve when it gives up its nuclear weapons and embraces commerce and engagement with the rest of the world that really wants to engage. Chairman Kim has before him an opportunity like no other to be remembered as the leader who ushered in a glorious new era of security and prosperity for his people. Chairman Kim and I just signed a joint statement in which he reaffirmed his unwavering commitment to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We also agreed to vigorous negotiations to implement the agreement as soon as possible. And he wants to do that. This isn't the past. This isn't another administration that never got it started and therefore never got it done. Chairman Kim has told me that North Korea is already destroying a major missile engine testing site. That's not in your signed document. We agreed to that after the agreement was signed. That's a big thing. For the missiles that they were testing, the site is going to be destroyed very soon. Today is the beginning of an arduous process. Our eyes are wide open, but peace is always worth the effort, especially in this case. This should have been done years ago. They should have been resolved a long time ago. But we're resolving it now. Chairman Kim has the chance to seize an incredible future for his people. Anyone can make war, but only the most courageous can make peace. The current state of affairs cannot endure forever. The people of Korea, North and South, are profoundly talented, industrious, and gifted. These are truly gifted people. They share the same heritage, language, customs, culture, and destiny. But to realize their amazing destiny, to reunite their national family, the menace of nuclear weapons will now be removed.
And that's an excerpt of what Donald Trump said in Singapore early Tuesday morning during a historic summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. There were a lot of course, made for television moments with this handshake, highly anticipated handshake. But in terms of what was achieved, Kevin, shouldn't this, the sort of traditional way of doing things is that the heads of state come together like Obama did with the Iran deal. You have two-party talks, you send your State Department head or high-level country representatives to a neutral area to meet for months and lay the groundwork and hash out the framework and have pages and documents of potential agreements. And then for the photo op, the two leaders will come together and have a ceremonial signing and handshake because now they're on the same page. Trump and Kim turned this over on its head. Is that a bad thing?
Certainly the foreign policy establishment, the elites in Washington and New York and other places think it was a bad thing. I'm not so sure it was because the tensions were so bad. I mean, they were hurling threats of a possible nuclear war not that long ago, just last fall.
Talking about one's button being bigger than the other's button.
Exactly, exactly. Fire and fury like the world has never seen. And Trump, at the United Nations, threatened to totally destroy North Korea. That's 25 million people. So because the rhetoric and the rhetoric was so difficult and so bad, it's possible that something dramatic was needed at the outset, rather than the traditional, well, these negotiations take years and you only get the presidents together at the very end. President Trump, to his credit, has said that he would go to Pyongyang. He said that he would invite Kim to the White House. He said that this will be a process with other meetings. And again, I don't trust Trump as far as I can throw him. And I think he's an abomination as a president for all kinds of reasons. But again, I think he's been smart enough to walk through the door that's been opened by South Korean President Moon and joined by Chairman Kim. The other thing is, I think Kim is a lot smarter than people give him credit for. While he has to pay homage to the legacy of his grandfather and father in terms of North Korean politics and history, I think he knows he's been dealt a pretty terrible hand. And right now, his nuclear weapons are at the peak of their value. So trading them away for a peace treaty, which we haven't gotten to yet, for better relations with South Korea, maybe even a confederation, maybe reunification, but especially to get the U.S. target off of his head. If he keeps his nuclear weapons, he has a permanent target on his head by the most gargantuan military machine the world has ever known. So it actually makes a lot of sense for him to bargain away his nuclear weapons at their peak value. Now, that may take years, and it may fall apart. We don't know. But now I do believe they are sincere about trying to get rid of them in exchange for real security guarantees, maybe investment in North Korea, maybe tourism, maybe more humanitarian aid. There's all kinds of things that can be put on the table, and it's very exciting.
Well, one of the critiques that's coming from the foreign policy liberal establishment is that Trump seemed to essentially promise that he would stop military exercises with South Korea, and the Democratic Party foreign policy establishment sees those exercises as critical and are upset that Trump seems to have given away U.S. Military leverage before anything was actually received in return.
That's ridiculous. Trump actually told the truth. He said that they are provocative. And of course they're provocative. Again, North Korea, 25 million people, one of the most impoverished states in the world, although they do have a fairly robust military. Every year, at least twice a year, they see these massive military exercises that are the largest anywhere in the world. U.S., ROK, South Korea, sometimes Japan also. They practice nuclear bombing runs. They practice decapitating or regime changing North Korea. Of course, North Korea hates and fears these. They are very provocative. The foreign policy elite hasn't done anything for peace on the Korean Peninsula in decades. And Obama, for 8 years, he was waiting basically for North Korea to collapse. He handed this problem off to Trump. If people don't like Trump's dealing with it, Obama needs to be held accountable. Now, Obama did a great thing with the Iran anti-nuclear deal. And of course, that was multilateral, and Trump did a horrible thing with violating that. So you have two presidents going about these things extremely differently, to say the least. But the foreign policy elite that's carping about Trump not having done it the right way, they haven't done anything for peace in Korea in decades. So we don't need to pay attention to that.
So the issue with Trump being the figurehead of these talks is that he is such a wild card, right? If we fear anything, it is that this unpredictable president who turns on a whim, whose mind is easily changed by forces that can manipulate him, through a television show on Fox News, is overseeing what really are delicate negotiations. Is that the one thing you might fear? When I look at this, I think that if one thing can destroy everything, it is that Trump himself could change his mind tomorrow, because he seems to just change his mind so easily and not care about the consequences of changing his mind.
Very much so. So just by serendipity, Monday and Tuesday here in Washington, my organization, Peace Action, and then the Korea Peace Network that I convene, were having our advocacy days on Capitol Hill. And it was just a coincidence. We picked those dates months before. We didn't know the date of the Trump summit. So Monday night, we had a vigil at the White House, and it was just a few hours before the summit convened in Singapore. And I went to bed, fearful of, if I go to sleep, is Trump going to do something horrible in the middle of the night, and I'm going to wake up, and we're on the path to war again? I mean, that's a very real fear. But one of the things now that's going to be a challenge, we have people on Capitol Hill this week, a lot of the Democrats now, again, they're saying, well, Trump, you didn't do this and that. And they're tutting about the process and all of this. And again, none of them have done anything for peace. And it's what the Korean people want. Now, Trump is very unpredictable, but I do think we're on the path to peace. And I think there is a momentum that hopefully should be unstoppable. Just look at all the commitments that have been made. Look at all the issues on the table. The other thing that I disagree with the foreign policy hobnobbers is this is not rocket science. And I'm using that, you know, pun intentionally. The issue The issues have been known for decades. So when they say, well, it could take years or a decade to denuclearize and all of that, all of the issues have been known for a very long time. So I don't think it takes forever. Now, implementing, verifying, making sure that there is a real bargain here, if North Korea is getting rid of their nuclear weapons, why would they do that without real serious security guarantees, some kind of at least confederation maybe, with South Korea, a peace treaty, et cetera. Because the United States is still going to have our nuclear weapons, right? We should be getting rid of nuclear weapons everywhere. And the hypocrisy of this is amazing. And the term denuclearizing the peninsula, well, what does that even mean? If the United States would, you know, swear to never again put nuclear weapons on the peninsula, which we had in the past, and let's say keep our warships 1,000 miles away or whatever, we still have submarines all around the world and our land-based ICBMs that could obliterate North Korea or any other country in 30 minutes. So what exactly does that mean? North Korea is still taking a much bigger risk than Trump is.
Now, given that the U.S. has inserted itself because of historical reasons between North and South Korea, Can peace between the two Koreas be achieved without a detente between the U.S. and North Korea? That is to say, if Trump tomorrow decides he's been personally insulted or some, you know, other bizarre whim that drives him away from these negotiations, can Moon Jae-in and Kim Jong-un still achieve their own peace, which is, of course, very critical?
I think they can. The challenge would be then there'd be a rupture in the U.S.-South Korea alliance. And again, a lot of the foreign policy elite, and I was catching some of them on cable news this morning, for whatever reason, they think that's the most important thing, the U.S.-South Korea military alliance, not what Koreans want on their own peninsula. This is the Korean peninsula. It's not Cape Cod. It's not Florida, right? We're only there with our huge military presence because of the alliance with South Korea and at South Korea's behest. Now, I don't think that it would get so bad that all of a sudden Moon Jae-in, who's very committed to peace, and if this all works out, he's the one who deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, not Trump. I don't think he would all of a sudden just cut the U.S. off and say, get out of here. You have 3 months to get out of here, because then he might be vulnerable to North Korea. Not that I think North Korea would all of a sudden rush in and attack. But I do think there's a long way that North and South Korea could go, and there might be a middle path. Let's say the issues around denuclearization, around the war drills, around the security guarantees to North Korea. Let's say those take a long time and maybe those are a little thorny. You could still go a long way towards North and South Korean detente or rapprochement or confederation, maybe reunification, maybe not. They could go a long way as long as the U.S. is not actively threatening to bomb North Korea or vice versa. So I remain very confident and hopeful about that aspect of it. You know, nobody can control Trump unless or until Bob Mueller or somebody gets him out of office, right? But in the meantime, I think North and South Korea can do a lot to make peace because it's what they want. And really the way to think of this is that would be the normal situation. It's been abnormal to have had this separation since 1953, this terrible war that most Americans don't know much about that leveled a good part of North Korea and that millions of people were killed. The fact that there's been no peace treaty since 1953 and this division, that's the abnormality. It would be normal for Korea to be one nation, one people, one culture again.
What did Kim Jong-un get out of the meeting with Trump? And I'm wondering if this is another reason why the Democratic liberal establishment might be against what happened, because it seemed as though Kim Jong-un, who is, of course, a dictatorial strongman, you know, whether he's just continuing an earlier legacy or not, that is the reality of what he is, that Trump legitimized him, legitimized his style of rule, and that Trump seems to have an affinity for men like Kim Jong-un, Vladimir Putin, Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines, the Saudi Arabian monarchy, etc. And that this fear? Is there any substance to the fear from the establishment here in the U.S. that Trump legitimized someone who basically is an undemocratic, dictatorial and murderous head of state?
Who do you negotiate with? You don't negotiate with your friends. And actually, Trump's very bad at negotiating with our friends, as we saw at the G7 summit in Canada. That was an abomination. Right. You negotiate with your adversaries. You know, Nixon went and negotiated with Mao Zedong, who probably is the worst mass murderer in the history of humankind. He's right up there. The U.S. and Soviet Union, we didn't agree about everything, but we agreed it would be bad to incinerate the planet, right? So there was a lot of citizen diplomacy that helped, and a lot of scientists got together before the governments did. But the U.S. and Soviet Union, while we had these horrible proxy wars in different places around the country, and people did get killed, and we were on the knife's edge of, you know, obliterating the planet, we did negotiate with the supposed evil empire. So that's who you talk to. You talk to your adversaries. That's how it works.
So what about the diplomacy of Dennis Rodman? Dennis Rodman, basketball player, who is just a very interesting person, who years ago had, violated sort of the U.S. policy of no Americans traveling to North Korea and met with Kim Jong-un, I guess their buddies. He was also at the Singapore summit and showed up with a Make America Great Again baseball hat. Was this a sideshow or did it play any role?
I'm actually kind of surprised that Trump didn't want to do a photo op. Because the three of them together would have been awesome as far as I was concerned. I was rooting for that, at least for the comedy relief. I have no idea whether Dennis Rodman helped to thaw relations at all. But if he did, good for him. And by the way, I'm a huge Chicago Bulls fan, and he was on three of their championships. So even though he was a bit of a nutcase, I do have a soft spot for Dennis Rodman. I have no idea. However, there is a serious side to this. One of the best things we can do is to rehumanize North Koreans. They're people too. There's 25 million people there that have dreams and aspirations just like everybody else does. So opening up more humanitarian aid. The sanctions are a real problem. They need more food aid. There could be 60,000 children in North Korea at risk of starvation, according to UNICEF. Nothing is worth that. Nothing is worth letting 60,000 children be at risk of starvation. The remains and reunions, reunifying families. There are families, North and South Korea, and some, of course, now in the United States, who have emigrated, who have been divided since 1953 and haven't seen each other. The remains of U.S. service personnel, which is one of the things that they did announce. They're going to resume that, the repatriation of the remains of U.S. soldiers who died in the Korean War, to bring them back to the U.S. Obviously, that's very important to some of those families. So these are all very important humanitarian steps that can be taken and need to be taken urgently. And a lot of times, and this is true in negotiations over the years, a lot of times those issues can open up space for the higher stakes nuclear negotiations, military negotiations, et cetera. So those need to proceed regardless. And it usually works that you build trust and confidence if you make progress on those issues that are maybe not as sexy or headline grabbing. We're already doing that. That needs to continue, as well as the military, the nuclear, the war games, et cetera. That's all got to be talked about. And again, I don't think this is rocket science. And you can decide, this is one basket of negotiations over here. This is another basket over here. This is what goes in a peace treaty. This doesn't go in a peace treaty. We can figure this out. And I really would like to know, if I had a chance to sit down with some of these self-appointed guardians of the foreign policy right way to do things, what are they actually afraid of? Do they have a lot of stock in the big weapons corporations that sell weapons to South Korea? South Korea is one of the biggest buyers of U.S. weapons. Is that really what they're afraid of? And, you know, weapons corporation stocks went down earlier after the first summit between Kim and Moon. What are these people really afraid of? They're afraid of peace breaking out? I really don't understand it.
Right. I mean, even if the talks do fail, as long as the failure doesn't lead to war, and you know, if the worst is that you get back to the status quo, then at least there has been an attempt toward peace. The fear is, of course, that something worse could happen. But it seems as though the hard work still remains to be done now. The handshake was part one of a multi-part step. Series of steps between the two countries' negotiators to hash out what it actually means to denuclearize, what concessions North Korea could get, and what it would do in return, right? Because now there's going to be perhaps a more behind-the-scenes, months-long process.
Well, and I don't think we can go back to the status quo, and that's good. And I guess the last word on the whole Democratic problem around this, Representative Ro Khanna from California, who spoke at our Korea Peace Network meeting on Monday to help us get ready to go do our lobby visits on Capitol Hill, he had a letter that was signed by 15 Democrats, encouraging Trump on diplomacy, because there was a very bad letter last week of 7 Democratic senators. And what he said was, if this was Obama doing this, Democrats would be standing up and cheering. He's exactly right about that. So we have to cut through the partisan tomfoolery. Nobody loathes Trump more than me. Every day I wake up and I can't believe he's still the president. But as long as he is, if he's playing an important role, I don't think we can go back to the status quo. I think there's been enough progress that the future looks very bright. Not to say that it's guaranteed. It certainly could be messed up and Trump could be the agent of messing it up himself. But I think there's been enough progress, especially between the two Koreas. And it's really about what they want. It's not about Trump.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us. Give out a website where people can find out more both about Peace Action and the Korea Peace Network.
PeaceAction.org and Korea Peace Network is best to find on Facebook. That's the easiest place to get us.
We'll link to both of those from our website. Thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Kevin Martin is president of Peace Action, also convener of the Korea Peace Network. We've been discussing the historic meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un in Singapore. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.